Hey, everybody. Got a fantastic episode of the Lockdown Nuggets podcast coming up. Have Jeff Siegel on from Early Bird Rights, Peachtree Hoops, Dime Magazine, and several others. Really good follow. One of my favorite follows on all of basketball Twitter. Very knowledgeable, insightful guy who's got really provided some great notes about the upcoming summer for the Denver Nuggets and the flexibility they have, what kind of contracts he expects for guys like Paul Millsap, Malik Beasley, Jamal Murray. Really good stuff there. But before we do, I want to let you know that Locked On NBA is doing a really cool mock draft right now with all of the experts covering all of the teams, everybody, every single pick going through and people explaining what they anticipate their teams will do, what their needs are. So head on over to Locked On NBA and follow that. It's a unique feature that we have in the Locked On Network that you don't get anywhere else. Experts, not national guys, not people that maybe did 20 minutes of research, but guys that actually live and breathe their team, telling you what they expect their teams to do in terms of trades, drafts, all of that good stuff. So you want to check it out. You also want to download the Himalaya app and listen to this podcast on that app. It's got really cool features where you can like and comment, you can create playlists, you can share playlists. Really cool feature, and they're a good partner with us. Without further ado, let's get into it with Jeff Siegel. A really fantastic discussion that will span two parts today. Part one, going over some of the free agents and who might be potential targets for Denver. And then tomorrow in part two, we're going to talk about Paul Millsap's extension, Jamal Murray's potential extension, as well as Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangómez, and throughout both episodes, a host of other things pertaining to the Denver Nuggets.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today, I am joined by a special guest to help me break down and sort of preview the upcoming weeks, the draft, free agency, maybe some trades coming up from Early Bird Rights, as well as Peachtree Hoops, Dime, a bunch of other places. It's Jeff Siegel.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I probably should have thrown in a question there in my introduction to you. I'm doing good, man. I am this week sort of pivoting to off-season stuff. I haven't wrapped my head around it because I've enjoyed the playoffs and the finals. But I'm starting to look ahead now. And first of all, a lot of this stuff, the Rich Paul story came out today it kind of shed a little bit of light on sort of the Anthony Davis ordeal. Just kind of off the top, I know this is off topic, but with the KD injury and AD basically saying LA or bust, how do you see, do you feel like this summer just changed dramatically this week? And how do you see those names playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly the KD thing, I mean, I feel like we sort of were, we knew that AD was an LA, New York kind of guy. We wanted, you know, they always wanted to push him toward those directions. They're making it, you know, they're being very aggressive in making sure that he doesn't get traded to a smaller team that they don't want him to go to, right. Like, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were traded. And obviously, you know, those two trades worked out super well for their teams and the players. Paul George is happy in Oklahoma City, and Kawhi Leonard is one game away from winning a title. So, you know, I think that because, you know, from Rich Paul's perspective, they wanted to push him. They wanted to make sure that the teams who might get frisky because of the way those recent trades have worked out, they wanted to dissuade those teams in a big way, and that's pretty much what they're doing.
Isn't that ironic, though? Like, I thought that Kawhi winning a championship and Paul George being perfectly content would maybe change, like, okay, maybe this is going to kill the whole push to New York or LA thing, but it's actually making the push stronger and more intense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's making the push stronger because perhaps winning and actually like going for championships is not, you know, first on their priority list.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. Cause otherwise what does New York and the Lakers have to offer you in that perspective, you know, from that perspective, unless the Lakers, you know, certainly they know more about what the Lakers' plans are. And if they, you know, have Kyrie coming down the pike, and then they also have, you know, they obviously have LeBron James already, in place. And Anthony Davis would make a little bit more sense in LA from a winning perspective, but certainly the Knicks, you know, with Durant going down, what, you know, what do the Knicks have to offer from a winning perspective, but maybe that's not quite their priority at this point.
What do you see KD to the Knicks? I mean, that was all the talk, you know, for the last several months, but I don't know if this injury changes anything.
I mean, if you're signing him to what is probably going to be a 3+1, you're going to lose the whole first year or most of the first year. Like, and are they going to be, if he can't come back until March or April, are they, I don't think they're going to be in the playoffs.
No way.
You know, so you're really losing the entire year. And one of the first, you know, whether it's 3 or 4 years, depending on whether he opts in. If he opts in, that means the contract's not going very well. So really, you're hoping it's almost a 3-year deal because that means he's playing well and wants to opt out and get another contract. So you're losing one of those 3 years. And if you're losing one of four, then that's even worse for you. So, you know, it's makes it really difficult. It makes it like – it makes it so that it makes more sense for him to stay in Golden State and just recover for a year and hope that he can, you know, contribute to them in next year's playoffs and then do this whole thing again next year. But it's from a New York perspective, if you can lock him in, maybe that's the right move to make just because, like, you have to lock in a superstar if you can. But losing an entire year off of his, you know, the best year of that contract is going to be the first year if he wasn't injured. So it's a very difficult situation for them.
It definitely sounds to me, just from doing this thought experiment, that it makes the most sense for KD to stay in Golden State because he could win a championship next year. If you know, they'll be in the playoffs even without him, and if he comes back in March and can be good by like the second or third round, you know, then it works out. But who knows? The Nuggets this summer, you're obviously, I promoted Early Bird Rights, which is a great site that breaks down a lot of the salary cap stuff, does some scouting stuff. Denver this summer, just kind of what do they have to work with financially? What kind of deals can they make in free agency as things sit right now?
At this point, they're pretty much just looking at their mid-level exception. It depends on, you know, that's about $9.2 million, which now, you know, as that exception gets larger and larger as the cap goes up, that becomes a pretty significant amount of money. Like, you can get a pretty decent player for $9.2 million on the market, but that's all they've got. Like, it's not like they can do three $9.2 million players. They really just have the one exception. The biggest thing that they have to work with that other teams don't are their trade exceptions. As from the Kenneth Faried, Wilson Chandler, and Darrell Arthur trades last summer, if they want to move very quickly in the first week or two of the offseason, they have those trade exceptions are available. They can bring in players on under those deals, whether those are sign-in trades for free agents or just regular trades for guys who are already under contract. That's their biggest way to add talent to this team. Of course, you know, adding the mid-level exception and some, you know, using the trade exceptions, that would push them over the tax and into the apron, and then they'd lose the full mid-level exception. So those are issues that they're going to have to sort of figure out. Of course, what the payroll budget is from ownership, that's going to be a big thing. Are they allowed to go into the tax? Are they allowed to really go in, you know, well over the apron? That's a whole, you know, that's going to be a whole thing for them to try to figure out. We thought that they were going to be willing to spend last summer, and then they made the cost-cutting trades and got themselves out of the tax. So, is, you know, was that a precursor to now they're willing to spend, especially after how well last season went and that, you know, how good it looks like this team can be with some additions on the fringes? So you would hope that they're willing to pay the tax after a great year and after Jokic really, you know, broke out from, you know, top 20 player to like top 12 to 10 player, depending on, you know, how you look at him. So you would hope that they're willing to spend, you know, to really spend money on this team. But, you know, until it happens, I'm going to be a little skeptical of that.
When do the trade exceptions expire? Are they a year from the date of the trades that created the exceptions?
Yeah, it's exactly a year. So the Chandler one is the 6th, and the Faried Arthur one is the 12th of July.
And free agency begins on what day this year?
It technically, the actual, like, literal moratorium end date is the fifth or sixth?
Yeah,
no, it's
so
the
it's
sixth.
Oh, so it's really quick with the Fareed one then. So it basically means they'd have to make the deal the first day or second day of free agency.
Yeah, the Chandler one is the one that expires the sixth, and they would literally have to make that deal on the moratorium date or on the day that the moratorium ends. It would have to literally be like the same day, otherwise they would lose it.
So I think the most likely scenario is that they probably just have their MLE. And that's like the one player they add, you know, whether either a player at the draft, and we're going to move to that here in a second, but or they just sign somebody to that MLE, bring back the same core minus Lyles, Leiden, and who was their other expiring this year? IT, yeah. Leiden and Lyles, those three guys gone, and then you bring in Vanderbilt, who was a two-way player last year. And actually, no, he wasn't. Was he their two-way? They had Brandon Goodwin and Welsh. Yeah, so he was a regular roster guy. Vlatko Chanchar, I think they will add. Is there anybody else? Is that the roster? Do they have two spots? Maybe they have two spots. I thought I worked this out and there was only one.
They should have a few spots. I mean, with Lyles, Leiden, and IT all leaving, you know, and Vanderbilt's already under contract, they should, you know, there are three spots there, and you know, if they add Kankar over the offseason, if they add a draft pick, maybe there's just the one spot left for the MLE guy.
Okay. So I think the MLE to me just seems like the most likely guy for that spot. So let's look at some targets in free agency for that one, and I'll just kind of quickly – we'll kind of mow through this list here. But Al-Farouq Aminu is a free agent. Is he an MLE target? I mean, is he an MLE guy?
He could be if things sort of dry up for him. I think, you know, he's coming off of a 4-year, $30 million contract that was, for what he gave to Portland, he was underpaid, you know, as a starting power forward. You know, if Denver has Paul Millsap and Aminu is more of a backup, then, you know, the full MLE makes a little bit more sense there from a value perspective. But he's going to find, I would imagine that he'll find work as a starting four somewhere, which is probably going to take him out of the MLE range, you know, especially because he's coming off of this, you know, underpaid contract. He's going to want to get paid, I would think. And so, you know, perhaps that's just a little out of their range.
He's another guy, too, that I really like him. You know, I think he's really good. He's not like the power forward of the future for Denver. If they kept Millsap, which I anticipate they'll do, we'll talk about him in the next segment. But then he becomes your backup four, and Denver has Michael Porter Jr., Jared Vanderbilt there that at some point you have to kind of like start segueing to those guys, and Aminu would sort of make that more difficult. So I don't, as much as I like him as a player, I only see him more as a replacement for Paul Millsap if something were to happen there, which I don't expect. Trevor Ariza fits, I guess, the archetype of what Denver needs, but the MLE, I think, might be, to me, it's almost too much for Ariza. I don't know that he's that good anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that, you know, just reputation-wise, that he could probably get more than that. You know, he got $15 million last year and obviously had a really rough year playing for Phoenix and then Washington. But you could talk yourself into him. I think as a team with cap space who needs, you know, a 3-and-D wing, you can just look back at the 2018 playoffs where he was, you know, so instrumental to what Houston was doing, that I would think that he's just on reputation is probably a better player than what they can get for the MLE. But, you know, whether he can actually live up to a contract like that is certainly an open question.
And I heard from a very reliable source in Phoenix that he was not a very a very good teammate or just coworker in general there. And I know Denver has put such a premium on just not bringing in any bad apples. Maybe that changes because I think that was a big thing for we have a bunch of young guys. Let's let them learn from good vets. So maybe they're past that stage, but I just don't know if Ariza is another one. I just don't see it happening. Harrison Barnes now, he's not an MLE guy. He's going to cost more, but he's an example of a guy that's good enough to make Denver a lot better, but not good enough to make them good enough. And so that I don't see him as a real option.
Yeah, the only way he's an option is if they're going to trade for him. I expect for him to opt in. If he opts out, he's definitely not an MLE guy. If he's opting out, that means he's got a deal for $20 million a year somewhere else or even with Sacramento still. You know, he's well out of their range, but also even adding him isn't necessarily going to like vault them over the top into the upper reaches of the Western Conference.
Yeah, and not all these guys are MLE. I've got a couple, like I even think I have a Max guy on here, but maybe two. But I just Denver, I do think, has some flexibility. They have some players people want, so if they needed to clear space, they could easily do it. In fact, you can make the argument that Denver needs to consolidate. They've got a lot of guys, Beasley, Wancho, Vanderbilt, MPJ, that just need minutes. And in the current rotation, like there's just not enough minutes for everyone. So I think Denver does have some decisions, even if they don't come this summer. Boyan is probably not an MLE guy either, but what do you think? He's a guy that people here locally are falling in love with. I don't quite see why.
Yeah, I mean, I really like him, so you know, I would be more on that side of it. I think he's a perfect complementary player. I think when he shared the floor with Victor Oladipo over the last couple of years, he's like 55, 43, 90 from the field. Like, he's just ridiculously efficient in a, you know, he was under 20% usage when those guys would share the floor, but when you've got Nikola Jokic, like, that's fine. You can have Bojan Bogdanovic play a smaller role, and I think that would make a lot of sense. I don't think he's an MLE guy, but he would be somebody that they could target in a sign-and-trade using those exceptions if they wanted to not use the MLE for tax purposes or for, you know, just keeping the overall payroll down. They could target him as like a $13.5 million player, use the trade exception to bring him in, sign and trade him, bring him in on a 3 or 4 year contract, and you know, send something small back to Indiana for their trouble. So I think that he would make sense from that perspective. I think he would play really well next to Jokic, next to some of the shot makers that they have in Murray, Millsap, if he's around as well. So, you know, I think he would be a pretty strong addition for them.
Offensively, I think he's great. I just don't think Denver – I think everybody's great next to Jokic, quite frankly. And Bojan would be better than most, for sure. But defensively, Denver needs a good defensive three, their final form at least. And I just – Bojan's not that. I think he's okay. I think my favorite stat is he played 2,500 minutes and recorded one block, which is – he's the first player 6'8 or taller to do that. So I don't know. He's a good player. He's a lot of fun. He's one of my favorites to watch. I just think he makes Denver better in an area they're already really good. Reggie Bullock.
Yeah, I mean, he can shoot the ball and maybe play some defense. And, like, that would be – like, if they wanted to split their MLE across three or four players – not three or four players, but maybe, like, two to three players, Bullock could be a part of that. You know, not you're not giving him a full $9 million contract, but if you want to give him three, four – like, he could shoot the ball off the bench. I don't know. Splitting up the MLE when they already have too many guys to fit in their rotation, bringing in multiple guys on the MLE doesn't seem to make a ton of sense for them just from a roster construction standpoint. But if they decide to consolidate and make a big trade, then Bullock does make a little bit more sense just as some, you know, bench depth.
Gotcha. Damari Carroll?
Sort of similar to Bullock, but better. Like, just better across the board. He would be somebody who, you know, could make a large portion of that MLE. I don't have a really strong feel for like what his market's going to be based on, you know, how he's performed over the last couple of years. He's had some injury issues. He's a little bit older, you know, because he sort of came into the league older and then bounced around a little bit before he caught on with Atlanta and then Toronto and Brooklyn. And so it's just been, it's been a weird path for him. And so I'm not totally, you know, I don't have a good feel whether teams think of him as like a starter level player or if he's more of like a $9 million bench player. If he's the latter, that would be a pretty good option for Denver.
Torrey Craig and Will Barton are also not starting caliber players, but Denver right now is forced to just because that small forward position is such a tough one. With Damari Carroll, the Nuggets kind of were called the Hawks of the West, you know, like they were the new Hawks as sort of a derogatory thing. And I think if you sign Damari Carroll, then that just will stick forever. If you have Millsap and Carroll both starting, it's like, okay, Denver really is the Hawks.
I would like that just as somebody who covered that 14-15 Hawks team with Millsap and Carroll, and they were super fun. And I mean, I think the biggest the overall results were relatively similar in that Denver won a whole bunch of games and then sort of fell short of what that, you know, a whole bunch of games should earn you sort of in a playoff setting. But I think the biggest thing for me is that Hawks team was so much older. You know, Millsap, Horford, Korver, like those guys were firmly in their prime, late prime, depending on who you're talking about, and had no like high level superstar. Like they might have had two top 20 guys, but they were like 18 and 19.
Right.
If they were, you know, if Horford, Millsap were even top 20 guys at that point, whereas Jokic is like top 12 to 13 if you're lower on him than some people are. So, you know, they have, you know, Denver's got this young superstar that they are not, this is not a flash of the pan type year, I don't think, that for the Nuggets.
Jared Dudley's another interesting one because I don't think he's like necessarily that great, but I think he would fit well in Denver. He's not, I don't think he's an MLE guy either. I mean, he's a lot below that, but I like him, and I kind of like the idea of him being in the locker room. What do you think of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a great guy. He's somebody who nobody has anything bad to say about him other than if you're playing against him. But on your, you know, if he's on your team, then that's somebody that you want to go to war with. That's somebody you want in your locker room. You know, really smart guy, really good leader, you know, brings enough on the floor to, you know, to help a team. I don't know that, I'm not sure that he's like a playoff rotation guy for them, especially because he's not super quick and doesn't really play, you know, is going to have some issues defensively. Like, it can't play the three really at all at this point. And so, like, as a backup four, if they wanted to bring him in, you know, for you know, whatever, $3 million, whatever it's going to take to bring him in, 3 to 5, I think would be the right move for him. But, you know, if they want to give some of those backup 4 minutes to Porter, Vanderbilt, you know, I'm not sure how much, you know, sense Dudley makes.
Yeah, he only makes sense, I think, in one of those consolidation scenarios where he becomes like the third power forward, but basically just the locker room guy, the Mike Miller role. And, you know, I would like him in that one. Tobias Harris, now obviously not an MLE guy, but similar to Barnes, just is Tobias Harris a guy that gets Denver maybe not over the hump for a championship, but does he get, like, how much better are they with Tobias Harris?
That's a good question. I mean, with Barnes, it's similar to Harris, that how much does what he bring to the table really sort of matter for them when they already have a super high powered offense? Can you just keep adding offensive players and the, you know, the overall offense just ticks up 2 points every single time you add somebody? Like, right. I don't know that that's, I think the two of us really look around the league and can say that's not how this works. You know, I think, you know, Philly sort of figured that out with Harris a little bit last year, where just adding star after star after star after star doesn't there's a law of diminishing returns at some point, and you can't just go and go and go until you know, have a super high powered offense. And so, you know, I think for Denver, Harris probably, I mean, he's certainly out of their price range. You know, if they wanted to make some sort of consolidation sign and trade for him, that's doable, but I'm not sure how, you know, how much he really cures what ails them. I think he would, you know, if you could do the same thing for Jimmy Butler, yeah, that's something that would be a lot more interesting. But for Tobias Harris, who struggles defensively and, you know, can be a little bit of a wallflower offensively, I'm not sure how much that really helps them.
Wallflowers are fine for me. I think Denver has their two standout guys in Murray and Jokic, and Tobias Harris is like Gary Harris. I think he'll knock down all the shots he's supposed to, and to me, I'm all right with that. But as you mentioned, the cost for him, you kind of go all in. I keep saying to people, when people keep asking me about a lot of these types of guys, I keep thinking that's Denver's all-in move, and I just don't know that he's the guy you go all in for.
I mean, we're going to talk about a guy, you know, in a couple of minutes of in terms of a guy who I would go all in for if I were them, but I don't think Tobias Harris is that guy.
Well, I assume you're talking about Jack Layman, who's next on my list.
Yes, of course, Jake Layman.
Or Jake Layman, sorry.
Is fantastic. He could barely play for the Portland Trailblazers, but he is clearly Denver's answer at the small forward position. If they can figure out a way to get to max money, then Jake Layman makes a ton of sense.
I for real like him. Like, he's a good cutter.
I mean, I think he's good in his role, but if you're paying him more than $3 to $5 million, like, that's probably overpay.
Do you like him more than some of the other names that we've thrown out that were, you know, Dudley, Carroll? Do you like him more or less than those guys?
I like him less than anybody we've talked about, but more than the guy we're going to talk about next.
Bamute.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Richard and Bamute, I don't, you know, he's just so similar to what Torrey Craig gives you, except for he's older and injury prone, then it's like, just stick with Torrey Craig. Like, you have that guy already on your roster.
And you have him for a good deal. I mean, Torrey Craig costs virtually nothing.
Yeah, and he's restricted next year. Like, they've got, like, if they want to keep him for, you know, the next 3 or 4 years, like, you know, he's going to be around.
Chris Middleton? I assume this is the guy you're talking about. Yeah.
He's my guy. I think he would be a guy who Denver would, that's a guy who could put them over the top, other than like the true superstars, like obviously Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant obviously isn't healthy, but if he were healthy, like those guys are not in their range for any reason. But Middleton, if it works out, would be somebody who could really put them over the top as a just a ridiculous wing forward defender who can, you know, we saw what he could do against Kawhi Leonard. If he can do that against Leonard, he can pretty much defend anybody in the league at the three and the four positions. So I really, you know, I really like what he brings to the table. He brings a level of, you know, on the offensive end, he can shoot isolation, scoring a little bit when things break down. He can hit tough shots. He can be somebody that they can go to late in the clock. I mean, Murray is one of those guys as well who can just hit these ridiculous leaning, you know, 17-foot jumpers with nothing on the shot clock. Those kinds of shots are in Middleton's game. He can post up a little bit. His offensive game would not be the reason you bring him in, but as a defender, he's just at such a high level right now that you know, he would be somebody who could really, you know, put them over the top in a championship contention.
I think offensively he'd fit great though. I mean, he does have a little bit of like that give me the ball and you know, take 2 or 3 seconds to make my mind up kind of game to him, but not too much. I mean, I think he plays within a system really well, and he's also, a lot of these guys, even the ones you're not liking, they're just the body type Denver's lacking. They have a bunch of guys 6'5 or under and, you know, 6'10 or taller, but they don't have a lot of these 6'8, 6'9 guys. And Middleton kind of, I don't know, what is he, 6? Is he 6'8?
Yeah, he's got to be. He's somewhere in through there. He's big enough to play, you know, the three and maybe a little bit of small ball four. It's not, I don't know exactly how big he is, but he's certainly big enough. Like 6'8, a lot of these guys.
Yeah. They have him listed at 6'8 at least. I don't know. So you like him. So if Denver, because I'm of the opinion that Denver can clear. Is he he's a max guy, I assume? I
mean, yeah, he's a big time max guy.
So I think Denver has guys. People always talk about there's not the cap space. Denver has so many players people want. Wancho, Beasley. I think Plumlee isn't expiring as good. Even Michael Porter Jr., if, you know, for whatever reason. I just think Denver can clear max space if they need to. Will Barton is the big contract, as is Mason Plumlee. But both of those guys are tradable, I think, especially Plumlee because he's expiring. Barton, the tough year makes it a little bit tougher. But if you throw in a Wancho or a Beasley or even a Monte Morris, if you have another plan for a point guard, those are guys people will want, and they'll gladly, in my opinion, gladly eat Mason Plumlee's salary for a year to get him.
Yeah, I mean, for $14 million, and it's not like Plumlee is entirely useless and
he's
just going to sit on the bench and do nothing. I mean, you know, if you were on the open market, would he get $6 million, $7 million, something like that? Like, he's a solid backup center.
I think that Mason Plumlee is a starting center for a rebuilding team. I've always said this is like his best role because he can run the pick and roll, he can pass, he can play defense. He's not great at anything, but he's good at enough things that you can have like a rookie point guard or second year point guard and be like, hey, run pick and roll with him. He knows what to do, and that's good practice. So
yeah, I mean, and I think he would be a good option for a team looking for a center and is in that rebuilding mode, and you know, maybe they can get, you know, with Plumlee, they get a smaller player, you know, Wancho, Beasley, Monte Morris is somebody I like as well as a backup point guard. Like those kind of guys, you know, would make sense to attach to Plumlee. And then, you know, assuming that you're moving on from Paul Millsap in this scenario to try to maximize your space, they are looking at, you know, somewhere in the $30 million range.
Yeah. So I just think it's doable. All right, Thad Young.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Thad Young. He's sort of a younger, better version of Millsap at this point. If they can get him, it would probably be on a similar sort of sign and trade to Bojan Bogdanovic, where the MLE is not going to be enough,
14,
but you're not going to try to like clear a bunch of cap space to sign him to $20 million a year. But if you could get him at, you know, 13.7 on that, the Fareed, I think the trade exception right there is 13.7, that would make a lot of sense to me.
So you like him. I think these are the guys I think Denver, if they do add a player, it's going to be this type of player. And then Thad, primarily a four to you on the Nuggets roster?
Yeah, I think he would be somebody that if they decide to move on from Millsap or it doesn't work out and he wants to move on, Thad Young would be more of a replacement for him rather than somebody you could play next to Millsap, because the offensive spacing would just get a little bit weird if you're playing Millsap and Thad Young together.
What about Marvin Williams? This is the last guy on our list. We went in alphabetical order in case you noticed this. Marvin Williams, what do you think of him?
He opted in for his $15 million for next year, so he would be somebody that they could target in a trade. He makes a little bit too much for those trade exceptions, but they can still swing something perhaps around it, you know, by a Mason Plumlee deal. I don't know that Charlotte necessarily needs Mason Plumlee. They've got a bunch of centers, but like that would be I think he would make sense as a shooter at the four. I'm not sure that he's worth the $15 million plus the fact that you'd have to make a real trade for him, not a trade exception trade for him. So that one seems a little bit dubious.
Let's go over to trade ideas here, because I don't Denver. I think the trade market almost as much as the free agency market is an option for them. Are there any trades that really stick out to you? First of all, are there any players on the Nuggets roster that you feel they should be trying to trade at this moment?
I mean, certainly if you can get off Mason Plumlee for a deal that makes sense, that would help them from a financial perspective, especially if they plan on using the full MLE and their trade exceptions. Like if they really want to add to this team from a role player's perspective, not necessarily from a package, a bunch of really good players and get like a superstar perspective, but just adding two or three players all in the sort of $9 to $13 million range, getting off of Plumlee's contract would allow them to have a little bit more space underneath the tax to get some of that stuff done. So he would be the primary sort of financial target.
Who would they get would they have to pick up a backup center then? I mean, just kind of one off the dumpster pile?
Yeah, sure. But like you can find a backup center that can give you, you know, 75% of what Mason Plumlee gave you for the minimum. You know, I think that there's so many backup centers out there who can play defense at a reasonable level. You know, you're not going to be able to replace his like elbow and post passing, but you know, you can function. If you're getting, you know, some guys at this like sort of $9 to $13 million range, hopefully one of them can play some offense and you know, run the second unit offense while Jokic and Murray, you know, are off the floor. Obviously you have Monty Morris who can run that offense as well. And so, you know, I think those, a backup center who can literally just run from paint to paint and just is a lob threat on one end and can be big on the other end, you can find that guy for so cheap, so much cheaper than $14 million that I think they could adequately move on from Plumlee and still, you know, find that guy on the free agent market.
Is there any player out there that you think, man, that guy belongs on the Nuggets? Would love to see a trade to get that guy in Denver.
I mean, if Houston is serious about what they've been what has been rumored about them, that they're sort of looking to shake things up and that Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker are on the table, either one of those guys would just be phenomenal additions, especially Gordon. Of course, you know, he makes a little bit more money than they can just take in on a trade exception, but he would just be such a good fit for what they need at the three in terms of, you know, being able to bomb threes from 35 feet basically, and you know, his ability to defend at a relatively high level. Like I was really impressed with his defense in the Golden State series. You know, his ability to get to the rim. You know, he's really strong, and I think he would be somebody that could be one of their long-term options at the three, even though he expires after this year. I think they could bring him back, and he could really, you know, play a big role for them.
At 6'4".
Yeah, I mean, he's so strong. He's strong as a bull. You can't back him down. You know, he's in the post. He was in the post against, like, Kevin Durant and was pushing him around and was pushing him off his spots. And, you know, even though he was giving up, whatever, 8 inches, 9 inches in height there, like, he was able to really, you know, bother KD, push him off his spots. Like, he was one of the better defenders against Durant in a one-on-one situation.
What would it cost just to get him? Let's just start with him, because I like both players a lot. I didn't think of Eric Gordon just because Denver has so many shooting guards, and that's what he is to me. But what would it take to get Eric Gordon, in your opinion?
I mean, that's probably, you know, it sort of depends on what Houston is looking for, of course. If Houston is just sort of trying to shake things up and tear things down, and they just sort of want to replace like for like, and somebody like Will Barton is interesting to them. Will Barton and, you know, a smaller asset, a protected first round pick, something like that would probably net you Gordon. But, you know, the fact that Gordon's contract does expire, he might be a little bit more of a rental. You know, he's been unhappy in places before, like New Orleans was not, you know, he didn't love it in New Orleans, and then he moved on to Houston and it's all great again. I don't know whether that's a small market thing or a winning thing. If it's a winning thing, of course he's going to win in Denver. But, you know, there are some, if you overspend for a guy like Gordon, there are, you know, the issue that obviously he could just walk next summer.
There's only been three players that have not enjoyed Denver in the Nikola Jokic era: Kenneth Faried, Emmanuel Mudiay, and Yusuf Nurkic. So and all three of those guys didn't like it because they were cut out of the rotation. So to me, like, even Mason Plumlee called this the most fun season of his life. He played 15 minutes. So I don't know. I think I don't worry about that kind of stuff for that caliber player. For an Anthony Davis, I do, because they seem to have their eyes on a bigger prize. But for a guy like Eric Gordon, I think he would be content, because it seems like every player is content in Denver and has fun with the style of play. What about PJ Tucker? What would it cost to get him? Because he was a guy I had my eye on.
Yeah, I mean, Tucker would be a really solid addition. Certainly a guy who, if Millsap is out the door, could just come in and replace a lot of what Millsap was giving them as a defender. As you know, he's a better 3-point shooter. Yeah. He was, you know, lethal from the corners this year. So, you know, I think that he would probably fit what they want more than Millsap, you know, even does at this point, even though Millsap has, I'm not totally certain which guy is sort of the better defender for what Denver needs. You know, I think that because P.J. Tucker can play some small ball five, he has a little bit of more versatility. Millsap can obviously play that small ball five as well, but has some mobility issues, I think, that P.J. Tucker does not have. Getting him would probably be, you know, would certainly be cheaper, I would imagine, in assets than it would be for, you know, for a guy like Eric Gordon, depending on, you know, it really depends, obviously all of these trades depend on what Houston wants, but Denver would have so much more flexibility in this sort of trade, because Tucker's salary fits one of their traded player exceptions. He can just come right in, and so they don't have to match salary to make that trade work. They can really, you know, get creative, whether it's a couple of young guys, Porter and Hernan Gomez, something like that, whether it's, you know, Hernan Gomez and Beasley, whatever they want to do. It doesn't, they at least they don't have to necessarily match the salary for Tucker.
I see him. Can he not play the three at all?
He might not be totally quick enough laterally to play the three. Like I would pencil him in as more of a four and a small ball five than I would as a four and a bigger three.
Can he guard Rodney Hood? I mean, this is like one of my baseline questions right now for Denver going forward. Is they need to find a guy that can guard Rodney freaking Hood.
That's, I mean, geez, if that's your question, there's a lot of guys who could do that. And Tucker
not on Denver, unfortunately,
just because Tucker's so good at you know, knowing the angles, and he's so smart that I think he could make it work. But on a night by night basis, guys who are quick like Rodney Hood might give him some issues.
This is my thing with Denver. They're a really good team, but they had a weakness at the small forward position that was such a weakness. Not just like, oh, you know, they got to pick up their... They had no answer that they couldn't even guard Rodney Hood, and it ended up costing them a playoff series against a team that, in my opinion, is not nearly as good as them. That's the end of part one of my conversation with Jeff Siegel. Check back tomorrow for part two. Lots of interesting stuff on Paul Millsap, Jamal Murray, and just a bunch of Nuggets discussions that I think really sets the table nicely for the upcoming offseason. It's coming quick. The draft is a week away. Summer League just a couple weeks away. It's going to be fun. So check back tomorrow, and thanks for tuning in. We'll see everybody again tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Locked on Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.